Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says aid agencies cannot access people who are starving.
I would be delighted if we were able to see a reduction in the number of those violations. And so we were able to say to the Security Council, the situation is getting better. I think that would be positive on all sides.
And the French medical charity MSF says the international community is responding to the aid agency's cry for help.
We are flying in medication and international teams to these displaced communities so that they can respond to the needs of these populations while moving with them area to area in their search for safe haven or resources.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says the government should take practical steps to make sure aid agencies can reach the people who are starving. The UNMISS chief says the government is still blocking aid agencies by delaying paperwork that allowed aid agencies to distribute relief items to families in need. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
David Sierra, the new UN Special Representative for South Sudan, says the South Sudanese government authorities continue to hinder aid agencies from delivering services across the country. He says several military checkpoints have been erected in areas hard hit by food shortages. He also accuses government bureaucrats of holding up aid workers with the paperwork. Sierra says in the past few days he has had to personally intervene on behalf of UNMISS workers trying to access places where people are starving. He says the government blocked the UN mission from reaching Wau Siluk when the UN wanted to assess the humanitarian conditions of people in the area. He says peacekeepers were also blocked from traveling to Kajukeji County of Yei River State, where fighting between government and armed opposition forced hundreds of civilians to flee into the bush.
I would be delighted if we were able to see a reduction in the number of those violations. And so we were able to say to the Security Council, the situation is getting better. I think that would be positive on all sides, both on the government side and on for the UN as well. So I would like to see a greater degree of compliance with agreements that have already been signed some time ago.
President Salva Kiir and SPLAIO leader Riek Machar agreed to allow unfettered access to aid workers and peacekeepers to all areas under their control in previous ceasefire agreements. South Sudan Deputy Information Minister Akol Paul Kordit says lawmakers of the Transitional National Assembly have yet to draft practical measures on how to ensure that aid agencies are not blocked from reaching people in need of help.
The parliament shall convene another session to discuss the speech of the president. And once the speech is discussed, the parliament shall then form or at least refer the speech to specialized parliamentary committees, whereby sections of the speech, including that of easing the access to humanitarian organizations, will be addressed by relevant parliamentary committees.
Sierra says the government's process of issuing clearances for UNMISS officials entering South Sudan is tedious and overly bureaucratic. The South Sudan government signed a status of force agreement with the United Nations in 2011, which allows UN to deploy peacekeepers in the country and guarantees freedom of movement for UN peacekeepers. The UNMISS chief says the mission is still waiting for the government to approve the visas of additional peacekeepers deployed to South Sudan.
There's some problem within the bureaucracy of the government, which is not allowing them to be able to get into the country. This is a real problem, and it interferes with our effective operations of our forces.
On Monday, three UN aid agencies declared famine exists in parts of South Sudan. The agencies say nearly half of the country's population is starving and they are unable to deliver food, medicine, and other emergency supplies to some of the most needy people because they were blocked by the government. Yesterday, President Salva Kiir said his government would ease access for humanitarian aid agencies, but he did not elaborate. Cordy says the government will look into complaints of UNMISS.
Since it has been raised now officially in a press conference by the UNMISS, we will look into this and assess and examine it. And once truth is found in it, then the government will definitely take appropriate measures.
Aid agencies say time is running out because heavy rains are expected in the next few months in parts of the country, which will make it difficult to distribute aid in areas affected by the famine. Today, the British government has announced a new support package for Somalia and South Sudan. International Development Secretary Priti Patel said 100 million sterling pounds will go towards relief work in Somalia and another 100 million sterling pounds for humanitarian work in South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
Aid agencies say they have seen an increase in international support since Monday's declaration of famine in parts of South Sudan, but confirm that aid workers are still struggling to reach areas hardest hit by the ongoing conflict. Ian Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
Nicolas Pazel, a South Sudan project coordinator for Medecins Sans Frontières, also known by their English translation as Doctors Without Borders, says due mostly to security concerns, it's become impossible for MSF to open new hospitals or clinics or even refer patients to other health facilities for care and meet the growing needs of civilians in and around Unity State, where famine was declared by three UN agencies.
In the past few weeks, we've encountered extremely high levels of malnourishment, above the yearly expected rate. And we've set up an emergency intervention to provide health care to malnourished children in those counties of Mayandit and Lir.
MSF has identified high levels of malnutrition in Dabwal and Mernyal in northern Mayandit County. Pazel says a quarter of patients under the age of 5 had global acute malnutrition, and at least 8% had severe acute malnutrition. Dipmala Mela, a South Sudan country director for Mercy Corps, a global humanitarian organization, says aid agencies can save lives and stop the famine from spreading if they receive more money for food assistance and medicine. But she adds humanitarians will have to come up with other ways to respond to long-term recovery assistance.
For example, we give a family or a village food supplies, say food ration for two. That's not sustainable. So in addition to that, for example, we can help them plant vegetables or a staple crop so that they have a safety net or something to keep the family going on. And these sort of relief efforts, if they are compounded with recovery, then we can think of a sustainable future where this population will not stay in cyclical problems of food insecurity, but come out of it.
Pazel says in recent months, MSF has switched to what he calls decentralized basic health care intervention to better assist civilians constantly moving from one place to another because of fighting.
What that means are our 200 staff who were displaced from the hospital and displaced in their communities have been moving with internally displaced people who are forced to leave their villages. We are flying in medication and international teams to these displaced communities so that they can respond to the needs of these populations while moving with them area to area in their search for safe haven or resources.
But insecurity is a major challenge, according to Bazel, who says it is impossible for his team to open up new hospitals or clinics so desperately needed by the South Sudanese people. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Some Juba residents have complained that the price of water sold by trucks around the capital is far too high. Yesterday, Juba City Council authorities responded by ordering the price for a 200-liter container of water to be reduced to 50 South Sudanese pounds. Some residents worry that the order will not be implemented. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
A generator-powered water tanker pumps water into Agnes Agio's drum in Juba's Nyakron area. Agio says she buys 3 200-liter water drums every day for her family of 10. She says her family uses the water to cook and wash clothes. She says before the South Sudanese currency plummeted against the U.S. dollar, she used it to buy a drum of water for 6 South Sudanese pounds. Once the fighting broke out in late 2013, Agio says water prices shot up, raising her daily expense on water to 210 South Sudanese pounds. To address the concerns of people like Agio, Juba City Council Mayor Stephen Wani Swaka issued an order yesterday regulating the price at which water tanker operators can sell water to residents. Swaka says he will take tough measures against any violators.
We are going to dispatch the information to each and every block so that let them know their rights. And then I don't like violence. If a driver violates by selling to you with the prices that they want, we are going to have a telephone number. Also, I wanted to appreciate the Minister of Interior by providing us a small number of police. And these police, we brought them in order to implement these policies.
Swaka blames the water price hike on the ongoing insecurity in the country.
The source of the problem is the economic problem in the country, not the mayor of the city. This is something that people must understand.
City council authorities ordered water truck drivers to sell 200-liter drums at 50 South Sudanese for close-in areas such as Nyokron and at 70 South Sudanese pounds for distant areas such as Jebel Dinka, Sukzande and Gurey. Speaking in Arabic, Agio says the price of water is still too high.
They are still charging us to pay 70 pounds, but getting money is very, very hard. People like us who do not have any work to do are very poor and cannot get this amount.
Juba City Council authorities point out that clean water is vital for life and Juba residents should not be denied their right to access water. Juba resident Mama Awadia fears those who sell water will not abide by the mayor's order.
Although it's 50 pounds as we heard that it's now 50 pounds, but getting 50 pounds is very difficult. Also for them, when they issue an order like this, those who sell water cannot implement the order from the city council.
Awadia also complains that sometimes the water tankers distribute dirty water to citizens. Biniam Tadasi, head of the Water Tankers Drivers Association, says although water tanker owners are facing problems of high fuel costs and bad roads in Juba, he will instruct the water tankers to abide by the new order.
We was discussed about the shortage of fuel with the Nile Pit. They will be solve our problems, and we have some road problems and spare part problems we have. Already we discussed with His Honorable Mayor. So we start to reduce the price of water. If some people, they are selling unacceptable price, we are not accept as association.
Authorities in Juba City Council and the country's owned Nile Petroleum Corporation have agreed to make fuel available for the water tankers so that they can easily supply water to the residents in Juba. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese students add their voices to issues facing the country. Stay tuned.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who has been the kindest person to you in your life?
I think my mom. She's kind, or she tolerates everything that I do. Whether it's being good or bad, she does tolerate. So she's kind to me.
To be honest, there are so many. I cannot really remember one particular one, but there's nobody bad, actually, to me. There's nobody bad, because if somebody does something wrong or bad to me, I think that person is trying to educate me on a particular thing.
The kindest person to me in my life is my friend, whom we have studied together from my secondary school to university life. We're still together. He's always honest, and he's so kind to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese students and youth leaders say the national dialogue is a chance for them to make their voices heard and participate in a meaningful discussion about the building their nation. But they also say politicians must listen to them if they are serious about charting a path to overcoming the many challenges facing South Sudan. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of students and youth leaders gathered at the Juba Grand Hotel to meet with the National Dialogue Secretariat about the role of young people as stakeholders in the National Dialogue, expected to get underway in a few weeks. Abraham Awalich is a policy analyst at the Juba-based Sud Institute and member of the National Dialogue Secretariat. Awalich says young South Sudanese have a critical role to play in the dialogue.
We want the young people to fully take charge of this process because it is for them. It is for their future. A stable South Sudan is important for their future. And so we think that they are actually the first stakeholders in this process.
Dorsila Mangua, a youth leader with the Juba-based organization New Page for Peace and Development, says young people can and will make a meaningful contribution to the national dialogue if the government takes them seriously.
This national dialogue really, it can really bring a peace to us so that we start sustain that internal peace in South Sudan. But it depends on the policy of the government. When us is the bottom of the everything in South Sudan, when we get up with resolution to him, so if we sign that the resolution is fine, then that could be, it can be worked out, I think.
Simon Deng is a second-year student in the Department of Business Administration and Management at South Sudan Christian University. Deng says the dialogue is an opportunity for college students like himself to finally start engaging with politicians about the future of their country.
This way we can now come in contact with our rulers, like the government. We talk to face to face, or like now we're on the table. It is a big chance for us with the student to tell them what we think.
Akat Malian, a second-year student in the Department of Law at Juba University, says young people have been used by politicians for years to wage wars so that they can maintain power.
We have been the victims of all the conflict because we have been used as the tool.
Malianj says today's discussions help educate young people on how to overcome their ethnic divisions and work together to improve their country. Mangar Aterchol studies agriculture at Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology. He says young South Sudanese have borne the brunt of the wars that have gone on more than 3 years now. But he says young people can change that trajectory.
We have suffered a lot, especially children, students, and those ones in the grassroots. We are the victims. So we really want to peace to be back again. If we are to be given these chances of attending these important consultative meetings to be here today, will also help in nation building.
Akur Sheila Alfred, a third-year student at Lusogo University, says she was inspired by today's discussion and will do her best to be an agent of peace among her university colleagues.
I was so happy to see my fellow South Sudanese discussing issues about peace that will bring our countrymates together, that will develop peace among ourselves, that will make us reconcile, most especially us youth. So if we are standing now and we are the youth of this country, of course we have to practice this to let our fellow youth outside there know that our country has to be in peace, not to be in conflict with one another.
President Salva Kiir said yesterday he will swear in the National Dialogue Steering Committee in the first week of March so that the dialogue can begin in earnest.
For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A Kenyan researcher presented a paper at the cross-border meeting of religious leaders in Lodwar, which says a border dispute may be on the horizon between South Sudan, Kenya, and Ethiopia over the Ilemi Triangle, a piece of land claimed by all the three countries. The researcher says Kenya is taking advantage of the possible discovery of oil in the triangle when the South Sudan government is weak. Dimo Silva Aurelio has details for VOA from Lodwar, Kenya.
Ilemi is a triangle piece of land measuring approximately 10,000 to 14,000 square kilometers, which lies north of the equator joining South Sudan, Kenya, and Ethiopia. All three countries claim ownership of the land. Researchers gathered interviews with church leaders, key politicians, civil society activists, and members of the border commissions of Kenya and South Sudan. Louis Kabure, a Kenyan researcher working with Pax Christi, says though colonial boundaries and red lines show that the Ilemi Triangle is in South Sudan, Kenya's border, redrawn in 2013, allegedly puts Ilemi Triangle inside Kenya.
Officials in South Sudan, for instance, feel that this research should focus on the local communities that live around the border. They fear that if it's made a bigger national issue, it might exacerbate tensions. The Turkana, from my observations also and my interviews, seem to be throwing this idea a lot that this is our land, or rather, either there are two narratives, either this is our land or this is no man's land. And as we know, it's really not no man's land. There's a very clear map and the clear boundaries. Maybe I can describe Ilemi a bit. Ilemi can be described as a triangular piece of land joining Sudan, Kenya, and Ethiopia. It's about, as Egbert mentioned, 14,000 square kilometers. It's at the moment de facto administered by Kenya, claimed by Sudan, was previously claimed by Ethiopia, but from the evolution of the dispute, Ethiopia doesn't lay any claim on it.
Kabure says although the Ilemi Triangle has been a place where pastoralists from South Sudan, Kenya, and Ethiopia graze their animals, no particular community has claimed the land. But she says with the potential of oil being discovered in the area, especially in Baringo and Pokot, the Ilemi Triangle has become one of the Kenya's key interests.
Another challenge has been suspicion. I know as a Kenyan researcher, I was received with a lot of suspicion from the Sudan side. I was seen maybe as a spy for Kenya. And for Kenya as well, there was this idea that I should protect the interests of Kenya. So that shows you how sensitive this issue of Ilemi Triangle is on all sides. Research has been done, not so much. I think if you notice the spike in the research on Ilemi Triangle, it's also related to the fact that there's this potential oil discovery. So we always have to have that at the back of the mind, that before, Ilemi was just this dry pasture land.
Kabure says while South Sudan pursues bilateral ties with Kenya, Kenyan authorities are extending and laying infrastructures at the Nadapal border to South Sudan, which he says could spark conflict.
I've also noticed there's a very heavy rhetoric within Turkana County about this issue of it's our land and we're going to fight it. And I think it's serious because there's a bigger, wider land problem in Turkana County that is being discussed, especially on the square kilometer of Turkana County. Some land was given to West Pokot and some to Baringo, and there's just this agitation from Turkana and this rhetoric of it's our land, we'll fight, we are warriors. So that, to me, spells another serious conflict risk.
The research recommends that Kenya, Ethiopia, and South Sudan trace the Ilemi Triangle issue back to 1907 in colonial times rather than making their own borders. The research quotes former Eastern Equatoria Deputy Governor George Echom, who hails from the South Sudan Nyangatom area, saying the main worry is that the triangle keeps getting sharper, or rather the horn keeps on growing. In order to avoid conflict, the research report recommends a soft approach where communities and governments are encouraged to talk face-to-face over the issue. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Lodwar, Kenya.
Amnesty International says growing authoritarianism, conflict, increased crackdown on free protest, political tensions, repressions, and xenophobia are just some of the threats to human rights in Africa. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
During the Nairobi launch of Amnesty International's global report, Muthoni Wanyeki, the group's regional director for East Africa, the Horn, and the Great Lakes, says there has been a backtracking in global human rights, giving examples from some of the 11 countries she monitors.
Obviously, none of us would deny that we're seeing growing or higher than usual intolerance of dissent, whether we're talking about the hardening of positions in Burundi, Eritrea, Ethiopia under the state of emergency, Kenya even in terms of sort of the informal attacks on human rights defenders, South Sudan, the mass detentions there, Sudan and Tanzania.
And, says Wanyeki, the fragility of some African states is especially worrisome as some leaders try to hang on to power.
Not too long ago, we were celebrating the end of many conflicts within Africa. We're now at the 10-year period, the transition period, so the two constitutional terms of 5 years. And what are we seeing? No transition. We're seeing attempts to change things, etc. And is 10 years really enough to deal with all the grievances, all the feelings of exclusion, all the that brought that conflict about?
Steve Coburn, Amnesty International's Deputy Regional Director for West and Central Africa, says that in every country where his team researched, there were banned protests, demonstrators who had been arrested, and even 8 or 9 who were killed.
So I think we're seeing a growing crackdown on free protests. And I think the other kind of major trend that we have is on the spread of conflict across the region. So, civilians have been killed in countries around the Lake Chad region, with Boko Haram, around the Sahel, in Central African Republic, but also in areas that we didn't used to see.
With respect to South Africa, Wanyeki argues that the country should be leading the way in human rights, but has fallen short.
The political tensions, the xenophobia towards migrant workers, asylum seekers, is of great concern because basically it is losing its moral authority to provide leadership on the continent.
Activist Boniface Mwangi attended the Nairobi launch, paying special attention to the Kenyan report, which discussed the extrajudicial killings of a lawyer, his client, and their driver in June, and violations by security agencies during counterterrorism operations, among other issues.
But I think we need to go beyond reporting. That's my call. We need to do more than this. Amnesty is doing a fantastic job, but what can we do to ensure that people don't just die and they become statistic for next year's report?
Amnesty says there are some success stories from the continent. Chad's former president and the DRC's former vice president were convicted for war crimes and crimes against humanity. South Africa's Supreme Court criticized the government for allowing Sudan's president, who has a warrant out for his arrest, to leave the country after a 2015 visit. And Kenya's High Court struck down the government's decision to close the Dadaab refugee camp. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a song, Morina Opidri by Lyson Lee. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Peleyo tamongole di utia tamuyole di utia lini mu pele di utia tamongole di utia opi madio le mandre nyotea opi madio le mandowe yesu madio le mandre nyotea yesu madio le mandowe opi madini lelendrowe 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 opi yesu ni lelendrowe lelendrowe lelendrowe.